before the Yiddish Kämpfer, which the Jewish fighter.
Yeah.
Which was really a kind of secularist Yiddish newspaper.
Yeah, I haven't heard that.
Had a lot of secular Yiddishists.
Yes.
He spoke to them quite frequently. I was always amazed by that.
Okay, where are these people located, and what was the...
Well, they were Yiddish writers on the newspapers. They wrote for the Farvitz. They wrote for the Tug, which was then the Orthodox major Yiddish newspaper.
The Orthodox?
It has since become... Gershon Jacobson is now the editor of the successor, the Allgemeine Journal.
Uh-huh.
And that's now very Orthodox, very Lubavitch.
I see.
Very Lubavitch.
Uh-huh.
But he was, I mean, he spoke in a number of places.
Hmm.
I think part of the issue was he really was not yet established nationally as a figure.
Yes.
And so that, while I think he personally had impact on a lot of them.
Yes.
He was a virtually unknown Rebbe.
Right, right.
And he spoke beautifully and movingly. It was after he became established with his books.
Yeah.
And lectures at the White House conferences.
That's right.
Then he was listened to.
Right. But I think from his point of view, he did try to do something in the 40s before he came to New York. And so do you remember other organizations that he might have been speaking to?
No, I mean, we really have to look that record up. I think Wolf will probably know more about that than I.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of, he's not on top of that.
It's hard to find.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find.
Yeah. You know, we weren't keeping records of all that was going on. And
can you say something about the awareness of what was going on in Europe in 41, 42, 43, and 44? In this country, I mean, I've looked at the, I think it's called the American Jewish Record, that starts, I believe, in, I don't know if it starts in 39, but it gives everything, a day-by-day account of what was going on in every European country, okay? Now, I think this is a summary of Jewish news releases that were published in various publications around the country.
A lot of JTA reports.
Yes. Now, I can look those up in the library and say, well, we knew everything, because everything is there.
You know, it's interesting. The Jewish Telegraphic Agency is now publishing excerpts almost every day from that record.
Yes.
When you read it, it really scares.
Absolutely.
It's scary.
Yeah.
Poland and this city, they rounded up 200,000 Jews.
That's right, they know everything.
They sent them off.
Yep.
And,
but what?
I couldn't understand that. I mean, I don't know, they just were such disbelief.
Yes.
I mean, no one could believe Germany, you know, which was a country of highest European culture,
mm-hmm.
science, technology. I mean, that's the place where the best Jews went to get their education.
Uh-huh.
Jews became doctors there, became psychiatrists there.
Where did they go from? Other European countries?
Eastern European countries. Yes. Poland.
Yeah.
Poland, Austria.
Yeah.
Czechoslovakia. I mean, wherever there were sizable Jewish communities.
Yes.
Look at Heschel himself.
Yes.
From Warsaw to Berlin.
That's right.
Because Germany had a reputation then as the Jerusalem of academia.
Uh-huh. I mean,
it was the Parthenon.
Yeah.
And if you got a degree from Germany, a doctorate degree from Germany, then you were a real scholar.
Yes.
And a lot of that still remains. One of the factors is that in Christian circles, among Christian theologians, the highest form of being a Christian theologian was to be a German theologian.
I see. From that period or even now?
Well, it's less so today.
Yeah, until the war.
There's still a lot of that today.
Though. Yes.
A number of Hans Kuhn, Rahner, I mean, I mean, the people who were the most esteemed, Tillich.
Yes.
Any event,
so
look, I have to deal with the fact I was very young at that time. I was, I started college, I was 14 and a half. 42, 43.
That was
15, 16.
Yeah.
I mean, I had that kind of adolescent sense of real and unreal. I couldn't believe a lot of it. And I used to go to these rallies often.
Yeah.
Persuade myself that something was going on.
What kind of rallies were there?
Well, Madison Square Garden, there are often rallies, and Madison Square Park.
Yes.
Manhattan Center.
Uh-huh.
Stephen Wise, Carnegie, Stephen Wise spoke at most of them.
In the early 40s?
40s, yeah.
And about what?
First about the Nazi Holocaust.
Yes.
The suffering.
Yes.
Calling on the government to allow Jews to come in. This was in 42, 43.
Yes.
Big mass protest rallies, and then after 45, 46, when the movement began to build a Jewish state, Zionism, then the rallies began to move in that direction, support for Israel.
So you know, at HUC, Sam Dresner and Heschel and Mrs. Atlas spoke to, Mrs. Samuel Atlas, said that people didn't talk about what was going on in Europe. Now, Stephen Wise was one of the great leaders in New York. What the hell was going on in other parts of the country? Do you know?
I don't know.
Maybe these rallies did not touch a lot of people.
Essentially, I think, mainly New York and...
Yeah.
Maybe Chicago, wherever Stephen Wise went, he spoke and made a point. But it was a very complicated and, in many ways, ugly period. I mean, when one thinks about it. Of course, one, you know, this is eisegesis becoming exegesis. We're reading back into that time, our consciousness today. And those days, Jews were not really organized politically.
Uh-huh, okay.
We had a couple few ambassadors to the Gentile world.
Yes.
And Zaphael Silver and Stephen Wise. Nachum Goldman was our foreign minister.
Yes.
And then later there was the opposition to them. There also was a feeling of disbelief. When the early information came in, it was not distributed, even by Stephen Wise and his people.
Uh-huh.
Especially, they didn't believe it.
Yes.
Didn't believe that hundreds of thousands of Jews were being killed. And one of my colleagues in recent years was Gerhard Rigner, the World Jewish Congress, who was in Switzerland at that time. He is supposed to have sent the first cable to Stephen Wise and to the British government, reporting on the reports he'd received in Switzerland of Jews being rounded up and killed and massacred. And according to the record, Wise wrote back, "Please seek confirmation."
Yeah.
Sumner Wells knew at that time.
Yeah. Secretary of
State Department.
State Department, yeah.
So, I mean, but what I mean by the differences in the period, Jews had no serious political organization or knew how to use political power or were afraid to use political power.
Yeah.
And the anti-Semitism was quite heavy in the
country. Yeah, yeah.
So that there was fear, and I think Stephen Wise was seized with that, that you make too big a ruckus over it, you will stir the Father Coughlin and the other anti-Semites.
So he kind of internalized the denial because of the precarious social and precarious political situation of the Jews.
To look at the record, though, when
time,
he finally realized that this was a major catastrophe, then he went to Franklin Roosevelt and told Roosevelt of how great a tragedy it was. And Roosevelt said he would do what he could to help. And Roosevelt conned the Jews in unforgivable ways. He would say one thing to Stephen Wise, Abel Silver, and the next day he would go off on a ship with the King of Saudi Arabia, telling him, "Don't worry, we're not going to allow immigration to Palestine."
Yeah.
Well, the day before, he had promised Stephen Wise and others that we will see the gates are open.
Yeah. See, I'm trying to explain Heschel's isolation in Cincinnati, and maybe, I guess by the time he arrived in New York, the facts were known. His mother had, and sister, he had already received the news of their death in 1942, I think it must have been. And he was in a different phase, and the country was in a different phase by 1945, by the time he arrived in New York, where one could no longer deny the realities of Europe. But in Cincinnati, perhaps they could. And I'm reluctant to blame the reform movement for that, if it's a kind of a regional,
Yeah, it was also an American Jewish phenomenon.
Yeah, yeah, because I hadn't been aware that in the conservative movement as well, there was a lot of reservations about Zionism, whereas I thought it was mostly a kind of, American reform.
Mainly in its leadership.
Yeah, but not among the people.
Finkelstein really set the pattern for that. Therefore, faculty members became very careful and circumspect.
Yeah.
There were some faculty members who were more forthright about it. Saul Lieberman, I think, was. I think Spiegel was, certainly Hillel Bobley.
Yeah.
Alexander Marx, so he was more careful. Anyway, it...
And Heschel, you don't remember if he participated in these expressed opinions?
No, well, I came to the seminary in 46. And I had very little contact with Heschel at the very beginning. My large interest then was Jewish history. Then.
Yeah.
For my first couple of years. And Jewish and Hebrew literature, I won a prize, and Hillel Bobley.
Hmm. That's a friend of Heschel's, Hillel Bobley, I understand.
Oh, yeah, they really understood each other. They felt they were landsmen in that sense.
Could you tell me a little about Hillel Bobley then?
Bobley's a literateur.
Yes. Taught at the Teachers Institute, didn't he?
Yeah. No, but he also taught at rabbinical school.
I see, yes.
Taught a course of modern Hebrew literature. Very elegant man.
Uh-huh.
Very cultured. And taught courses in Hebrew. Responded in Hebrew as well as we could. And, because we didn't learn to speak Hebrew, basically. Do it at Yeshiva University.
Uh-huh.
We didn't learn Bible, we didn't learn history, we didn't learn...
Mainly
Gemara.
Yeah.
Bobley was, I think, he was deeply Zionist to his core, and much of the literature dealt with Zionist writers.
Yes.
And the writers who contributed to developing the whole Zionist mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, I mean, I knew they were friendly. I would see them walking occasionally and talking to each other, mostly in Hebrew. But I didn't know much more about that than that.
Yeah. But he still was somebody that Heschel really was close to.
Yeah,
I don't have much about him. Let's see if we can return to Martin Luther King Jr. I think that you said the contact, or maybe Wolf said that the contact between Heschel and Martin Luther King's movement was made by Everett Gendler, or was the AJC already in touch with Martin Luther King, and one of you or both of you had the idea to get Heschel involved?
Well, AJC was then, by then, very much involved. We had to be careful because our AJC leadership in the major southern cities became frightened.
Mm. That's been terrible.
Well, I remember I was present at once when our leader in Birmingham called and warned John Slauson not to get involved.
Yeah.
Because he said, first they'll go after the blacks, and then they'll come after us.
Okay.
And we'll be made the scapegoats. So we went ahead, and we took positions on civil rights in support of Martin Luther King, but we made sure not to do it in a flamboyant way, which would expose them to reprisals. And generally, I think we handled that very well, in a very skillful way. But when Look, the first point of connection was with Morris Abram.
Yes.
Well, Martin Luther King just started out. They tried to kill the movement. That is, the officials in Atlanta and the police.
Uh-huh.
By arresting him.
By arresting King.
By arresting King.
Yes.
On some trumped-up charge.
Yeah.
Morris Abram, who was then a very young lawyer from Fitzgerald, Georgia, came to Atlanta, and he offered to defend King.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And he got King out of prison.
Uh-huh.
I think that's where Martin King began to feel some natural
very justice. Interesting.
The other thing that, I mean, these were the foundation stones, little by little, being put together. The other practical thing that happened, and I didn't find this out until much later on, we had a reception, I don't know about, I guess 5 years ago, in honor of Martin King's birthday in Atlanta. I organized a large meeting with Coretta Scott King, and it was at the time of the killing of the 12 black youths.
Mm.
We had a memorial service for them. And we invited Daddy King,
yes.
King's father. Whom I love. He just
is
such
a great guy.
And his bear hugs.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. And he got up at a meeting and he said, appreciate this memorial meeting. I want you to know that Martin King felt that the Jewish people were the best friends of the movement.
Mm.
That of all the people in America, the people you really count on, for the Jews.
Wonderful.
So you don't know this, but I'll tell you this. When Martin got the movement started here in Atlanta, somebody in the government put the Internal Revenue Service on us, and they began to ask for an accounting of all our books. They were going to use that to suffocate us. And the first person volunteered to read the books and to defend their position was a Jewish accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And he went over the records and he literally drove the IRS away.
Ah.
He saved the movement.
Yes.
Mm. So we could have been suffocated.
Very interesting.
That man, that accountant, was present at that meeting.
Yes.
With Daddy King, I don't remember his name. Well, Coretta King knows.
Yeah.
It was a very moving.
Hmm.
The other thing is, Martin started out, and we wanted to call our first meeting in Atlanta in a hotel.
Yeah.
No hotel would give us a room. We'd rent us a room. One person who finally rented a room to us was a Jewish man who owned a hotel in Atlanta. Mm. It was our first meeting place. And Martin, thank God, and he never forgot the Jewish people.
Yeah.
That whenever he needed something at a critical time, the Jews were always there. No ands or buts.
Yes.
And said, so over the years, we've never forgotten that. And you stayed at our side throughout the whole experience.
Terrific.
So the Jews who knew that, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Jews became so outraged by Jesse Jackson.
Yeah.
There's a Jackson who was a second, third-rate lieutenant with Martin King.
Yeah.
But the master himself
had
these feelings. But he also had these deeply biblical feelings.
That's right. That's right.
Exodus. The Exodus, Moses of the Exodus, liberation from slavery. That was a dominant theme. He spoke more about Moses and the Exodus than he ever did about Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder if this is in Taylor Branch's book.
I don't know.
Going to find out.
Yeah,
give him this material.
There's a black theologian at Union Theological Seminary, James Cone.
Oh, yeah.
Who once wrote about the Exodus theme.
Yes.
The Rights Movement.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing from him, it really struck me, black Christian. That Moses and the Exodus was more important to the blacks than Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so that the preparation is completely natural, and I suppose the actual physical taking of Heschel at the Selma, as Wolf had explained it, I guess Andy Young, Everett Gendler,
Everett, I mean,
called
Everett,
Andy Young or something like that, and Andy Young called up Wolf or something like that. Do you remember what Everett was doing in that period? Was he a congregational rabbi? Was he at the seminary?
Yeah. Probably.
Next week, anyway.
Yeah, an interesting guy. I always liked him, like, he's a vegetarian.
Yeah, he's a vegetarian.
Pacifist.
Yeah, yeah.
He was an interesting guy. I always found we really appreciated each other. We had a very good friendship, and it was limited. But in fact, I think about it now, I was one of the first people he came to talk to before he made a decision to become a rabbi.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that completely.
Hmm.
He came, we had a very good long talk, and he said that kind of made some difference to him.
What was he doing before that?
I don't know.
I'll have to ask him about that. That's very interesting.
I just had this connection with an image, deeply suppressed or forgotten image.
Yeah.
Of Everett coming in. I found him a very attractive young guy.
Very interesting guy. I've seen him for a few years.
I didn't know it was going to be a good thing for him, but.
Well, I think so.
He ought to know what he. he's been very gifted.
Who were the people at SCLC that you were working with? Andy Young and King?
Andy and I were quite close.
Yeah, he's such an articulate, intelligent man.
Yeah, and he had a sense of balance.
Yeah.
Plus, it was honest. You know, if he felt that the Jews were doing something that was troublesome for him, he would tell me.
Uh-huh.
And he would say, look, help us out. You know, we need your help with something. We're going to need Jewish help. Well, I'm going to march on Washington. We would need your help. We're really going to turn out people here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we got Jewish buses. We got buses of Jews and train loads of Jews and car loads. And Jews were a very large number of people who went.
Heschel wasn't involved in that.
No, there, Joachim Prince,
that's right,
the spokesman. And that had to do with institutional, Jewish institutional.
Yeah, no, I remember that speech, actually.
He was very good.
Yeah.
He was very good. And there was something quite appropriate because of his own experience with Nazism.
That's right.
He had this kind of personal, and he used it very well. And look, he was a very well-spoken man with a wonderful voice.
Oh, yeah.
So he did very well. Probably did better than Heschel might have done in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was a big open. I mean, I was there on the steps and... You really had to have a powerful voice to get through.
Yeah, that's right. It has to be understood.
Eugene Carson Blake had a powerful voice, and Martin King, clearly. So,
you know, 1963 was an incredible year for Heschel. The Religion and Race, the White House Conference.
White House Conference was before that.
Was it 60? 61.
There was 61. 60 and
61. 60, 61. He gave a series of lectures at Stanford University on Who is Man, which apparently inspired some people to go to Selma, Montgomery. That's what Taylor Branch tells me. And then I guess it's in the summer he spoke on Soviet Jewry. Were you involved in that?
No, just he had talked to us about it. And he talked to Wolf.
So it was really the Rabbinical Assembly.
The Rabbinical Assembly, I have to be very careful. First of all, I was just overwhelmed with work and duties, and I was building that whole new career at AJC and building programs. So I just worked on those things where I knew I had a very real need for Heschel, real need for connection. And I knew the Wolf was, there's a line at the top, there's a prophet for the Hebrews and there's a prophet for the Gentiles.
Yeah.
And we divided up the turf.
Yeah.
I mean, almost unconsciously, he became a prophet for the Hebrews and I became a prophet for the Gentiles.
I see, I hadn't heard that. That's,
The one thing I did do, several times, I set up meetings with Christians and asked Heschel to address them.
So these are meetings that probably I don't know about.
Yeah, they were in New York. One was at a hotel, one was in Israel, in the Middle East, the time when they... Oh, 67. 67. It was a disaster.
Oh.
reaction in the Christian world toward Israel.
We have to talk about that. I really want to talk about that.
Well, I wrote a paper about it, Conservative Judaism, around that time.
No, I don't know that.
In 67, I guess.
Uh-huh. 67, okay, so that should...
Someday I've got to put together a collection of papers. I mean, I got a folder of stuff like that.
I think it would be wonderful.
Nice.
So tell me, what... You were the prophet to the Gentiles, and Wolf was the prophet to
the
Jews.
Hebrews, yeah.
What, the Hebrews, what qualities of Heschel then would be different in those two contexts?
Well,
or what?
Heschel's Yiddish neshama.
Yeah.
His Jewish soul came out when he spoke to Jewish audiences.
Yeah.
When he spoke about Soviet Jewry or Israel or religious observance, this was his Hasidic soul.
Yeah.
When he spoke to Christians, he saw it first. He always saw it as a very great mitzvah. Very great commandment to try to do something to help overcome Christian resistance or hostility.
Yes.
Also to help them understand Jews and Judaism.
Uh huh.
And he was masterful at that because many saw him as Abraham the prophet.
Right.
And the one thing all Christians understood about Jews were the prophets.
Yes.
Because Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, terrific quotations for sermons.
Yes.
And a powerful commitment to social justice and universal values.
Yes.
This is what Christians saw as their thing.
Yes, yes.
Heschel was able to communicate very powerfully on those kind of themes which Christians understood.
That's right, that's right.
Use that as a bridge then to talk about specific Jewish issues.
Right.
I remember, I started to say, in 1967, after the war, there was first amazement and then hostility toward Israel. A lot of anger in the Christian world. And it really began reaching quite troubling proportions. I know that's when Henry Pitt Van Dusen wrote an article for a letter to the editor of the New York Times and said that Israel's attack in 1967 was like the Nazi Blitzkrieg.
Horrible.
Yeah. And that stuff got too
crazy. Who was he?
He was then president. He was retired by that time. He had been president of Union Theological Seminary.
Oh, really?
Very distinguished.
Horrible.
A Protestant leader.
Yeah.
And he generally was, as many Presbyterians were then, hostile to Israel's growth and development. In any case, we brought together, I don't know, 75, 85 top Christian leaders. I mean, that's the conference I organized. And special to address them.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very effective with that. I had a chance to ask, but the tension in the room was electric.
Mm. Where did this meeting take place? Do you know? Do you remember?
At a hotel.
Hmm.
At a hotel somewhere. I don't know where Wolf remembered, but
yeah.
I have to look it up.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Well, he tried to get his friends to sign an advertisement in the New York Times after the Munich massacre. You with Marshall Mayer's brother with donating the money, is that?
I don't remember. There was an ad on Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
I wrote the ad.
Yes.
The first person I got involved was W.D. Davies.
Oh, yes.
Professor W.D. Davies.
Yes. He's a friend of Heschel's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he had enormous awe of Heschel. Although I think that Heschel did not give enough credit. Christians, credibility to Christians, but that has to do with this kind of strange Welsh.
What kind of credibility? What do you mean?
Well, you know, accepting Christianity.